So when the supreme absolute truth, the original form of God, the source of all avatars, comes to this world, he's going to do things that are so wonderful, and instead of doubting his wonderful activities, we simply fall in love with him when we hear his wonderful activities. And we forever want to go on glorifying his holy names. Each Gopa had his own lunch bag also, and carried a flute and a stick and a buffalo horn. Before they left in the morning, their mothers would decorate them very carefully with pearls and jewels and little paintings on their face made with sandalwood, perhaps mixed with saffron. They were very beautiful. But the children didn't care so much for those ornaments. When they came to the forest, immediately they started dressing themselves and decorating themselves with the opulences of Vrindavan Forest. They were taking leaves and flowers and peacock feathers, and they were collecting fruits and minerals and grinding them up and painting their bodies with those, putting dots and different pictures on their bodies. And they would put the peacock feathers in their hair and the fruits in their hair, and they would put flowers all over their bodies, and they would decorate their clothes with leaves. And they considered this to be the most beautiful ornaments. And they all made themselves beautiful for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna would put the leaves and the flowers and the feathers and the dyes and the fruits all over his body for the pleasure of his devotees. Krishna would play his flute. Sukadeva Goswami describes Krishna's beauty as he was playing with the gopas in the forest of Vrindavan. His complexion was like the effulgence of millions of sapphires. He had the complexion of the Kalpa Vriksha Tamal tree. His yellow dhoti was effulgent like lightning. There was wild flowers in his hair, and he had a garland, the Vajayanti Mala, which is all wild, fresh flowers from the forests of Vrindavan. In his left hand he held his flute, in his right hand he held his stick for herding the cow, the calves. In his belt, he had his buffalo hair horn. His hair was bedecked with a peacock feather. Around his neck was the gunja mala. He had earrings that were swaying to and fro as he was dancing and singing with his friends. On his fingers, there were effulgent rings that Mother Yashoda put on. On his chest, there was the golden line of Sri. He had armlets and bangles and ankle bells. The demigods and even Lord Brahma would be stunned to see this five-year-old child playing and wrestling with his friends in the pastures of Brajbhumi. Sometimes the children would steal another gopa's lunch bag, and that was very serious. And the gopa would go running after that boy. And when he just came to him, the gopa would throw it to another gopa. And the poor boy ran to the second gopa, and he ran all the way there, and as soon as he approached him, he would throw it to another gopa, and then another gopa, and he would be running and running and running and running, and finally the boy just couldn't get his lunch bag back, and he would begin to cry. And all the gopas would laugh to see him cry, and they would give him his lunch bag back. You see, that was not a cry of distress. That was a cry of joy. And they were performing all these beautiful pastimes for the pleasure of Krishna and Balaram. Every possible game they were playing. Srila Prabhupada says that in this world, children naturally love to play games. Yes? In fact, as this katha is going on now, all the children are out playing games. Yes? Where does that propensity come from? Why do all children have that in common? In history, every child likes to play games except Prahlad. I can't tell you how many parents, when their baby's born, they say, "I think he's just like Prahlad." And Jiva Goswami, we were explaining the other day, when all the other children were playing games, he would be worshiping Krishna Balaram. So this propensity to play games, Prabhupada, he says, the source, the origin of this propensity in all children to play is Goloka Vrindavan. Where all children are eternally playing. And even adults, if you examine your own heart, you probably really want to play games. But you just don't have time. Or your body just can't do it anymore. Or you're afraid someone might see you. Because the soul is eternally youthful. Srila Prabhupada gave this example when he was in Jagannath Puri on the ocean side with some of his disciples. He said, "Many years ago when I was a young man, I was here in Puri, and I was running, and I was playing. I was a boy here in Puri. I was running, I was playing, I was jumping in this ocean. I was splashing. But now I'm with a cane." He said, "In my heart, the propensity is to do that, but I can't. That is the nature of old age. That is the nature of this world. But in the spiritual world, Krishna is Navayovanam. He's eternally youthful. And in the spiritual world, it is Chintamani Dham. All our desires are fulfilled. Everyone is eternally youthful. And even if you have Vatsalya Ras and you have apparently an older body, it's still eternally youthful. It just looks a little older for the sake of relationship with Krishna. So all the games and all the propensities for playing originates in the cowherd boys' games of play with Krishna and Balaram in the spiritual world. I remember hearing the story where one day Srila Prabhupada was sitting. He looked very, very grave, as if he was meditating on the highest siddhanta. And one devotee dared to ask him, "Srila Prabhupada, what are you thinking about?" And Srila Prabhupada revealed his heart. He said, "I am meditating on what Mother Yashoda packed in Krishna's lunchbox today." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's the highest Siddhanta. That's the ultimate conclusion of the Vedanta Sutra. The preparations in Krishna's lunchbox, which are offered by the love of Yashoda Mai. And perhaps even Srimati Radharani made some preparations for that. Krishna loved to see the beauty of the Vrindavan forest. And because Vrindavan is not different than Krishna, it is the affairs of Vrindavan is overseen by Vrindadevi, an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Vrindavan, at every moment, is manifesting newer and sweeter and more wonderful objects of pleasure for Krishna and his friends to enjoy. The same forest, she's manifesting in ever new ways at every second. You can never get bored in a place like that. Just like if you live in a house and you just, every few years, you want to redecorate it because you're just tired of it. Yes? Or you're looking at your backyard, it's such a nice backyard, and you think, let's just go to the Himalayas and see something else. But in Vrindavan, ever expanding, ever new, ever fresh. And the Vrindavan forest is constantly making more extraordinary sights for Krishna and his friends to enjoy. So Krishna would go to a solitary place just to look over the beauty of Vrindavan forest. He was standing alone, and one of the gopas, a distance away, he cried out, I will run and I will touch Krishna first. And then another boy cried out, I will touch Krishna first. And another boy said, I will touch Krishna first. And soon you have hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys chanting, I hope you're not tired. I hope you're listening to this narration. You're supposed to all say, I will touch Krishna first. This sakyaras is not cheap. It's a very exalted state of consciousness. All the boys are, I will touch Krishna first, and they're all running full speed to touch Krishna first. Krishna wants to reciprocate with the love of all of his devotees. He's unlimited. The first boy comes to touch Krishna, and Krishna opens his arms and embraces that boy. And Krishna feels the ecstasy of the love of his friend, and the friend is experiencing the ecstasy of the touch of the body of Krishna. He's just utterly thrilled in ecstasy to be embraced by Krishna. But who touches Krishna first? By Krishna's unlimited, inconceivable potency as Bhaktivatsal, who's affectionate to all of his devotees, he expands himself to simultaneously be touched by every cowherd boy and embrace every cowherd boy personally. And they all think that I have touched Krishna first. Shri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. Krishna's Rasa Bihari. He can fulfill every devotee's desire to love him and serve him personally, completely. In the Rasa Leela, every gopi was thinking, Krishna's only with me. And in this beautiful pastime, all the gopas are thinking, Krishna's allowed me to touch him first, and he's so happy with me, he's embracing me. They would play their horn, they would blow their buffalo horns. When Krishna would blow his buffalo horns to call the cowherd boys, or when he would play his flute, it was so personal. He was speaking his message of personal, individual love for each of his devotees through the sound of that flute. When Krishna played the fifth note of Bamsi on Sarat Purnima, to the older gopis or to the gopas or to everyone else, they were just enchanted by the ambrosia of the flute. But for the gopis, there was a personal, private, secret message of love that came into their ears and into their hearts, calling them. Krishna was calling them by their names, come to me. And how could they not come? When Krishna would play his buffalo horn, every calf, every gopa would get Krishna's personal, very, very intimate message just for them. He was calling for them. He was awakening their ecstasies of praying. When Krishna plays his flute, it's not just air coming from his mouth. It's the love from the core of his heart for each and every one of his devotees emerging from his heart and traveling through his breath into that sound vibration through the ears and into the core of the heart and the soul of his devotee. Krishna would play with his friends. They would love to imitate the animals of the forest of Vrindavan. They would see those very fat black bumblebees hovering over the kadamba flowers, the malati flowers, the champak flowers, the sweet, sweet lotus flowers. And they were intoxicated by the fragrance. And above and beyond that, they were intoxicated by the fragrance of Krishna's body, which was just making them mad. And for the pleasure of Krishna, in their intoxicated state, they would be expressing their love by buzzing. Bzzz. This is not just the buzz of a bee. This is from the core of the hearts of these nitya siddha, pure devotees, many of them. Others are sadhan siddhas, but they're pure, unalloyed devotees chanting Krishna's glories in their language. And when the bees would buzz, Krishna could understand exactly what each bee was chanting for him. It was with love. Krishna understands the heart. So some of the gopas were imitating the sound of the bumblebees. Everyone, please. Much louder, please. Sound like you're snoring. Bumblebees don't sound like that. But thank you for your... I'm because it was offered with love and devotion, I'm sure for Krishna you sounded just like the bumblebees of Goloka Vrindavan. In other gopas, they would look up into the trees and they would see the kokila birds, the cuckoo birds. And they would listen to them singing and they would imitate the sound of the cuckoo birds. Well done, well done. A bird would fly overhead, and some of the cowherd boys would follow and go right into the shadow of the bird and open their arms or take their chatters and make it like wings and follow right in the shadow of the bird. And there were beautiful swans in the waters of the clear lakes, moving their necks about. And the gopas would follow the swans and move their necks and move their bodies, just like the swans. Then they saw on the shore of the little lakes and in the river Jamuna, ducks, sitting ducks, quacking. And the boys would sit right next to the ducks. Just like the ducks, they would sit and quack. Louder, please. Well done, well done. The peacock would dance. And the boys would dance just like the peacock. In fact, Krishna, they would say, Krishna, dance like the peacock. And Krishna would dance just like peacock. And all the boys would start dancing like peacocks and making the sounds of the peacock. Everybody, loudly, please. Much louder, please. Excellent. Then they would see monkeys. One gopa saw a little baby monkey on a branch and very quietly climbed up the tree. The baby monkey was busy doing his monkey business. And the boy would sneak up behind, from underneath, and with his hand, he would pull the baby monkey's tail. And the baby monkey would scream. And jump away to his mother, and the gopa would chase after him. Then they'd see one monkey jumping from one branch to another, and they would follow right behind that monkey and jump from one branch to another. Then they'd study the expressions on the monkeys' faces. And the boys would perfectly imitate all the different expressions on monkey faces. Nobody will look at you. Except me. You don't have to do that one. And then they would screech just like the monkeys. Everybody. Louder, please. Both male monkeys and female monkeys. Everyone. The frogs would be jumping. And one gopa would go next to the frog and jump just like frog. And then the frog would get scared and jump in the water, and the gopa would jump in the water just like the frog and swim just like the frog and croak just like the frog. Louder, please. Do you remember what Srila Prabhupada said about the croaking of frogs? He said, prajalpa, talking mundane subject matter, is just like the croaking of frogs. Prabhupada studied, well, he gave us an analysis of the croaking of a frog. He said, every frog is thinking that he is reciting beautiful poetry. And he's croaking very loud. And one of the things about frogs is they don't care who's around, they just croak. Like if you're having a nice discussion with someone, it's not that the frogs will say, well, I should not say anything. And they're very proud of their sweet voices. But actually in the night, the snake is looking for the frog. And how does he find the frog? By hearing him croak. And hearing the croaking of the frog, he devours the frog. So similarly, when we are speaking prajalpa, we are calling death to come and devour us. In other words, we're simply wasting the most precious, valuable moments of this human form of life. But in Vrindavan, all the frogs are expressing their pure unalloyed love for Krishna, for Balaram, for Srimati Radharani, and for all their associates. And each frog is expressing their love for every other frog, and every other peacock, and every other blade of grass, and every other tree, and every living being. They're expressing their universal love emanating from their love from Krishna, as they are very loudly croaking the glories of the Lord. Cowherd boy would see his reflection in the water, and he would start speaking. He would start imitating his reflection. And then start calling his reflection bad names. Sometimes they'd go to a well, and they'd yell into a well, and they'd see the reflection in the well also, and then the echo came out. They'd call Krishna. Just see, somebody's in there. And Krishna would call out, "Who are you?" And an echo would come, "Who are you?" Krishna would say, "I asked you first." And the echo would come out, "I asked you first." Krishna would say, "I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj." And the echo would say, "I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj." Krishna said, "I'm the only son of Nanda Maharaj." And the echo would say, "I'm the only son of Nanda Maharaj." And Krishna would say, "How dare you say this?" And the echo would say, "How dare you say this?" Krishna would say, "Come out, I want to slap you." And the echo would say, "Come out, I would have to slap you." And everyone would be really laughing. As the boys would call the echo bad names. They would play games where one boy was the emperor and the other was his subject. Sometimes they would play games of constables and thieves. In this connection, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, he describes the unlimited fortune of the cowherd boys of Vrindavan. Who the jnanis worship as a supreme all-pervading Brahman. Who the yogis worship as the Paramatma. Who the devotees worship as the supreme personality of Godhead. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan do their heaps and heaps of devotional service in the form of the highest pious activities. They were playing with Krishna as their dearest, most intimate friend. Sometimes they would wrestle with Krishna, and Krishna, for the pleasure of his friends, would be defeated. Rupa Goswami teaches, somehow or other, always remember Krishna. And never forget Krishna. That is the perfection of life, and that is the means of attaining that perfection. The fortune of the Brijabasis is supreme. On this day, Balaram's birthday, one of the most powerful demons in all of creation was sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. This particular demon was so envious. He was so powerful. He had so much hate burning in his heart. The demigods, although they drink amrita, nectar, which immunes them from early death, they were in constant fear of this particular demon. They prayed again and again and again, hoping for this demon to be killed. His name, Agasura. Aga means sin. Agasura was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, who were both killed by Krishna. This demon wanted revenge. He burned with a lust for revenge. He considered Krishna the most despicable rascal. My sister Putana, my brother Bakasura, they were gentlemen and lady. And this Krishna maliciously kill them. He wasn't thinking that Putana happened to come to Goloka or to Gokula herself with her breast coated with poison with the intent to murder Krishna. He wasn't thinking that Bakasura jumped on Krishna, who was just drinking some water with his cowherd boyfriends, and swallowed him up to murder him. Just see how selected and blind people can be. According to our motivation in life, we have our own interpretation of reality. He wasn't just thinking these things up. This was his conviction. That my brother and sister were good people and Krishna was evil and he attacked them for no good reason and killed them. Because of his own demoniac false ego, he couldn't see the reality. That is human nature. Everyone sees things according to our conditioned state of consciousness. And everyone sees everyone else and the whole world according to our own motivations. What is reality? Reality is Krishna is the Supreme Godhead and everything belongs to Him and we are all His eternal servants. As soon as we come off that platform, everything we see, everything we believe is subjected to our own egoistic interpretation. No one sees anything else identically the same. There's so much hatred between Pakistan and India. Yes? But what's the reality? Pakistanis are thinking Indians are like this, and Indians are thinking Pakistanis like this. And Palestinians are thinking the Israelis are like this, and Israelis are thinking the Palestinians are like this. And the Ku Klux Klan is thinking the lower minorities are like this, and the lower minorities are thinking the Ku Klux Klan is like this. And they all believe it very deeply. They believe it so much, they're willing to kill. They're willing to persecute. But factually, and Prabhupada said like this, if the Pakistani takes his next birth in India, that same soul is going to hate the people that he loves and love the people that he hates. It's all relative. Who is it we hate? Who is it we love? It's just according to our conditioned state. If a Palestinian really hates the Israelis so much and dies thinking of an Israeli, he's going to be born an Israeli and hate the Palestinians. That's the way karma works. Everything is relative. Everything we think is real is true is being filtered through our mind and our ahankar, our false ego. I was brought up in America, and I was taught that we gained independence from the British because they were just exploiting us and they were making us pay all kinds of taxes just for the sense gratification of the king across the ocean. Poor people just working hard, trying to live free, and the king is just exploiting and exploiting. I was taught to believe that. Till I went to England, and I asked somebody, what are you taught in school? That all of you Americans were just renegade, uncivilized people, and we were trying to keep you civilized. Who's right? One may be right, one may be wrong, but still we see it according to our consciousness. Because Agasura was materially attached to Putana and Bakasura, he saw them as very pure, innocent, good people. They might be demons, but that's good. But Krishna, this little baby, he's seeing this 2-year-old little baby Krishna as an evil force who attacked his innocent sister. Can you imagine this? But we can learn a lot from this. We should understand our own limitations. We should try to go beyond our own conditionings. Even within the Hare Krishna movement or within the society of Vaishnavas, sometimes there's so much conflict based on different beliefs due to basic... We've been hurt, we've been brokenhearted, we've been misused, we've lost our faith, whatever reasons, it creates a color in our consciousness and we start interpreting things that way. And it creates so much conflict and disunity. The only reality is that we are all part and parcel of Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das. All this other stuff is just temporary phantasmagoria that we have to somehow or other deal with, but we should keep our mind focused on the truth. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when you are wise, you will understand what is the truth. That all living beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. Krishna is the truth. To remember Krishna, to serve Krishna as the servant of the servant of his servants is the only truth. Agasura, he had so much hatred in his heart. He came to Vrindavan. And from a distance he was watching Krishna playing with his friends. They were enjoying so much. They were imitating the bees and the monkeys and the frogs, and they were playing with amalaki fruits, and they were wrestling, and they were laughing, and they were joking. They were just so happy. Akasura could not tolerate seeing their happiness. Whatever flame of hatred was in his heart was fed the unlimited fuel to make it burn ever hotter by seeing them happy. Intolerable to see them enjoy. A saintly person is paradukaduki. To see another's happiness is our happiness. To see another person's suffering is our suffering. But for a demoniac person like Akasura, cannot tolerate seeing people happy. Such a selfish ego. I am the one who should be happy. Why should anyone else be happy? A devotee, seeing other devotees getting blessed, seeing other devotees being empowered, seeing other devotees joyful, that should be our happiness. That is a Vaishnav. That is the standard of a Vaishnav. But an envious person, we may be trying to be Vaishnavas, but if there's envy in our heart, which is absolutely contrary to the principle of a Vaishnav, we don't like to see someone getting more blessings than ourselves. We cannot tolerate seeing someone being gifted and empowered more than me. We cannot tolerate seeing someone making advancement and feeling joy when I'm not. If you're happy to see other devotees being blessed, you will go back to Godhead. Krishna will bless you. Don't let this agasura of envy cripple your Krishna consciousness. Yes, Aga was just infuriated to see the bliss of the gopas. And he made a plan that was more demoniac than any other demon that ever came to Vrindavan. He was so envious. His plan was not just to kill Krishna. His plan was to kill every one of the gopas that Krishna was with, and every one of the calves, because he knew if he killed Krishna and all the boys and all the calves, then all the parents and relatives would die due to broken hearts. He had a strategic, organized plan to literally massacre every living being in Vrindavan. Absolute genocide. Krishna, the gopas, and the cow, calves. Not only all the gopas and the gopis, the animals, the trees, everyone in Vrindavan would die. This was his intent. And what a plan he had. By his incredible mystic power, he assumed the form from his demoniac human-like Rakshasa form. He assumed the form of a gigantic snake and laid right on the road where the gopas were all dancing and singing in the direction of. His idea, to swallow and kill everyone at the same time. That monstrous form is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. He was 8 miles long. He opened his mouth. Huge. His upper lip was in the clouds, and his lower lip was on the ground. He stuck out his tongue and stretched it as far as he could get it. It looked like a massive road. Agasura waited patiently. Meanwhile, the gopas, dancing along the pathways of Braja with their calves, they saw this amazing form. And one of the boys called out, look at this incredible feature of Vrindavan that has been created for us to enjoy. Let's go look at it. And another cowherd boy said, that's a snake. And he ran away. And all the other cowherd boys say, why are you such afraid? Don't be afraid. There's no snakes that big. It's not a snake. Don't you understand that Lord Narayan loves Krishna so much? He's always creating the most incredible features in Vrindavan for all of us to play with. Look at this. Children like to go to amusement parks, yes? To go into these tunnels and roller coasters and everything. Well, this was the most amazing. The cowherd boys were explaining. This attraction that has been created in our Vrindavan, it looks like a big python. And his mouth is like a gigantic cave. And his tongue is like a long, long, bright red road. And the eyes, Agasura's eyes, were burning red with envy, just waiting them for to come in. And one of the cowherd boys, as they got closer, said, There's a wind coming out. It seems like this attraction is so much like a python that it really, like he's really breathing. And that fishy smell smells like the dead bodies he's devoured in his intestines. So they were arguing, is it an animate living being or is it an inanimate living being? And meanwhile, they were all dancing on the tongue of Agha, right into his mouth. Now, Agha means sin. If we take this story to our level, we're all trying to be devotees. But Maya Devi, by creating extraordinary features, pulls out her tongue, and it looks like the most colorful, decorative road by which we approach sinful activities. That tendency is there in anyone who is not completely purified, the tendencies toward sinful activities, toward Agha. But Krishna is always there to protect us if we simply turn to him. Some of the boys realize this is a snake and he's come to kill us. And they were all laughing and playing their instruments and dancing and clapping their hands and smiling. And they all looked at Krishna and they say, we have nothing to fear, even if he is a big python, even if he's really come to kill us. Bakasura swallowed Krishna, and just see what Krishna did to him. Let us go in. Krishna will save us. And clapping their hands, laughing and joking, they all ran right into the belly of Agasura. And as each one was going in, they were all smiling at Krishna, clapping. Krishna was watching this. He knew it was Agasura. He knew the heart of this envious, violent demon and what his intentions were. And Krishna was just about to stop his friends. No, no, don't go in. This is Agasura. This is a demon. He wants to destroy us all. But before he was able to even warn them, they were all inside his mouth. How is this possible? Why didn't Krishna warn them? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains so sweetly what happened there. Krishna wanted to stop them from going in. But the cowherd boys, they wanted to see Krishna save them by going in. Because of the love of the cowherd boys, Krishna is controlled by his devotees' desires. So therefore, their desire took precedent over his desire. Krishna was defeated by the love of the cowherd boys. And now all the calves and all the gopas were in the belly of Agha. And because it was so dark and there was no proper air and it was all filled with poison, they all died. All those unlimited calves and unlimited gopas were dead, laying in the belly of Agha. Now, the way pythons destroy their victims is they have the means by which whatever they swallow, they contract their insides and they crush it. They crush it and they crush it and then they dissolve it with very, very powerful acids. But Agasura kept his mouth open. Why? Because the killer of his brother and sister, Putana and Bakasura, was still outside. He was the main target. He was waiting for Krishna to enter. Out of love for his devotees, Krishna was wondering, they're all inside. How am I going to kill this demon and not hurt them who are inside the demon? So Krishna made a plan. Krishna thinks like this because he's the supreme unlimited personality of Godhead who has personal relationships with all his devotees. Then Krishna himself entered the mouth of Agasura. As soon as Krishna stepped in, the mouth of Aga shut tight. Absolute darkness. When Agasura closed his mouth, the demigods, who felt the only hope of relieving this universe from Aga's demoniac powers was Krishna, and now he has been swallowed. They were in intense anxiety, crying out, "Alas, alas!" And meanwhile, Kamsa had a network of spies everywhere. As soon as it happened, the information came to Kamsa. And Kamsa and all the demons were celebrating. Krishna's dead. All the gopas, all the calves, all the residents of Vrindavan are now on the verge of death. They were celebrating. Hearing the pouring out of anxiety of the devatas, his devotees, Krishna immediately expanded his little 5-year-old body. It expanded so fast and so huge, it totally filled up Agasura's entire body. No air could come in or out. Agasura, who was a powerful mystic yogi, expanded his body bigger and bigger and bigger, but as he expanded, Krishna was expanding even faster. There was no possibility of air coming in or out. Agasura was choking. That massive serpentine form, 8 miles, was just moving back and forth in total desperation. He couldn't breathe. And ultimately, with no place for the air to come in or out, his life air, burst through the top of his head. And his spirit soul, in the form of a brilliant light, entered into the sky and remained there. This is the perfection of yogis, that their spirit soul at the time of death comes out from the top of their head, the Brahmarandra. Agasura died like a yogi. But not just that. When Aga died, his mouth opened. And Krishna, he glanced upon all the gopas and calves who were all dead. His glance was like immortal nectar. Immediately it brought them back to life, in full consciousness, in full health. In fact, They didn't even know what happened. They all just saw Krishna before them. And Krishna told them, let's go outside. And they all, dancing and clapping their hands and smiling at Krishna, all went outside of the mouth of Agasura back into the forest of Vrindavan. And the last person to come out was Krishna. As soon as he came out of Agasura's body, the brilliant soul of Agasura merged into the body of Krishna. It's very interesting the way Krishna killed Agasura. It's completely different from the way he killed any other demons in Vrindavan. Because like other incarnations, the Lord assumes unbelievable forms and styles or uses so many weapons. In Vrindavan, Krishna never used a weapon. He never grew big. For Putana, he was just a little baby, a couple days old, just sucking like any baby. That's how he killed. Sakatasura, a little baby, just a kick. Trinavarta, a little baby, just squeezing. Vakasura, Vatsasura, didn't. He just killed them in his own little personal childhood form in such sweet ways. But with Agasura, he actually expanded his size to be gigantic. Our acharyas tell us why. Because Nanda, Yashoda, they were nowhere around to see what he was going to do. And all the calves and all the gopas, they were dead. They couldn't see anything. Krishna never showed these types of opulences in front of any of his devotees because it would interfere with their love for him as a child. As long as he killed all the demons like he was, they all thought it must be Vishnu protecting him. But if he were to grow into an amazing, enormous form, they would realize he must be Vishnu. So he took the opportunity, his Aishwarya Shakti manifested in this form, and he allowed it to happen. Why? Because it would not interfere with anyone's love for him as an ordinary child. Because there was no one to see. Agasura attained Sarupya Mukti. That means he attained a spiritual body like the Supreme Lord who would live eternally in Vaikuntha. Most incarnations of Krishna, when they kill their demons, they get liberation, mukti, into the Brahma Jyoti. But Krishna, being Avatari, the supreme source of all incarnations, he did something very, very special. He gave Putana, the older sister, elevation to the Vaikuntha area of Goloka Vrindavan to love Krishna as a motherly nurse for all of eternity. He gave Agasura an eternal life of devotion in Vaikuntha. Why? Krishna sees the good and magnifies it. Even though Agasura had the most evil intention of all other demons, when the gopas entered into his body, the gopas were having such a good time. They really enjoyed him. Nobody enjoyed Putana. Nobody enjoyed Trinavarta. But Agasura was a magnificent attraction. Can you imagine how they were running and bouncing on his tongue? Look at his teeth. His teeth are like huge marble pillars or like snow-capped peaks of mountains. And look at his eyes, they're red. And they were just astounded. And when they entered into Agasura's mouth, they were in total bliss. Agasura gave incredible happiness to all Krishna's devotees. And when they entered in him, because they were so happy and they were so merciful, just by associating with them in his belly for a brief moment before he died, he actually, due to the association of those cowherd boys in his heart, for a brief moment, he felt affection for them. He felt happiness due to their association. And Krishna made him suffer like anything. And through that suffering, all his sins, all his anartas, all his envy, all his hatred, all his illusion, all his ego, everything was gone, and Krishna kept in place one thing. That moment of affection for his devotees. And Krishna reciprocated and gave him eternal life in the spiritual world. That is our hope. That is Krishna. Hearing these wonderful pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna should give us great faith, great hope. The more we hear, the more we become purified. When Brahma, well, actually first the demigods, when they finally saw their prayer fulfilled, Aga's dead, they were just coming closer and closer in hidden places, showering flowers and beating kettle drums and playing horns and celebrating. Lord Brahma heard this and he came. Lord Brahma was astounded. He was really astounded. He saw many avatars kill many demons. But he saw with his own eyes how Agasura entered into Krishna's body and attained Vaikuntha Mukti. Krishna says, Yegatamam Prapadyante. As you approach me, I will reciprocate accordingly. Because Agasura allowed Krishna to enter his body. Krishna reciprocated and allowed Agasura to enter his body. But Lord Brahma was amazed, astounded. How could such a murderous demon get devotional service in Vaikuntha? And he was really trying to understand, who is this Krishna? Meanwhile, the body of Agasura dried up like this gigantic 8-mile snakeskin dried up. But it, by Krishna's Lila Shakti, by Yoga Maya, it was like a magnificent cave. And it remained one of the favorite places for the gopas and Krishna to play for so many days in the future. In this way, Agasura, not only did his soul go back to the spiritual world to serve Krishna, But his body remained in Vrindavan to be one of the favorite places of playing for Krishna and his friends, because he was touched by the body of Krishna, because he was an object of the mercy of Krishna. Everything about him was transformed into pure devotional service. Sukadeva Goswami, he tells that to Maharaj Parikshit, one year later, the people in the village of Vrindavan heard this story from the cowherd boys. Parikshit Maharaj was really amazed with this. Usually, whatever he does in that day, the cowherd boys are singing the praises. How is it that they never told the people of Vrindavan for one full year? And Shukadeva Goswami said, in fact, when they finally came back to Vrindavan and told them, they told them immediately, as soon as they came back. But it was one year later. Parikshit Maharaj was very inquisitive. Please tell me why. That will be discussed tomorrow. Agasura represents the anarta within our heart of the mentality of cruelty to others due to envy. It is one of the greatest of all demons within. We may speak cruelly, either directly to a person's face, or we may speak cruelly behind a person's back to hurt a person's reputation, to make a person look bad before others. And the nature of the ego, the nature of the mind, very expert at justifying us, whatever we do. The false ego wants to convince you that you are a saintly person, and that your opinions are for the welfare of the world. And when you criticize someone, you have the evidence, you have the authority, and you're simply saying it out of mercy. How many of us have this experience? But it may be Agasura convincing you of this. If there is a tinge of envy that is motivating this, an envy that you may not be willing to admit, an envy you may not be willing to see, or an envy that you see and you do admit, but you just can't control it, and in any way you cause cruelty to others, you are being devoured by the sin of Aga. So we have to be very careful of this anarta. It is a massive impediment on the path to pure devotional service. It is an obstacle in our journey to Vrindavan. And we must understand it carefully. And when it comes, it's there. That envy in our heart is there. In one beautiful lecture, in the first chapter, first verse of Sri Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada talks about Dhritarashtra, how envious he was. But not only was he envious, but his ego was so intelligent that he justified his envy. He couldn't see that he was envious. All he could see was the faults of Bhima, Yudhisthira, and Arjuna. For him, and not only him, but he was so powerful in his own conviction, he convinced almost everybody around him that the Pandavas are bad, they are evil, I am good. It's envy. Srila Prabhupada explains the foundational principle of material existence is envy. And then he explains what envy is. We do not like to see someone else having what we want. It is intolerable for someone else to have what we want. Whether it means relationships with people, or whether it means success or wealth, or health, or spiritual empowerment. It's very deep-seated. We should not be a servant of envy. The only way to defeat this agasura of envy is to seriously, like the cowherd boys, totally take shelter of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada has given us the prime benediction for all humanity, to purify the heart of this envy, of this propensity to find fault with others. Rupa Goswami says, the quality of pure devotional service, one of the primary qualities of pure devotional service, is we lose the tendency to find fault with others. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatir anyata. In this age of Kali, how to get out of this envy and thus be liberated from this material existence and attain the loving service of Radha and Krishna? There is only one way: to sincerely want it, long for it, cry for it. Develop a real positive service attitude, a spirit of servitude toward the Vaishnavas and for all living beings. Sevan mukhe hi jivado. Srila Prabhupada said, if we have this spirit of servitude, really longing to be the well-wisher of others, and in that spirit, we cry out the holy names of the Lord.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Much louder. Let us chant one more time.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
I wanted to say something before you did that. This time when we chant, but don't chant yet, please. Chant with a prayer, crying out for Krishna to kill this agasura of envy in our hearts. Fix your consciousness, fix your mind, fix your life with this prayer. Krishna, please kill this demon of envy from my heart, for I can be a devotee that will please your heart. With this prayer, as loud as you possibly can, with deep feeling, chant the holy name. Vishnu, 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 much louder, please. Krishna, 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 Krishna. And like Agasura, if we can somehow or other take pleasure in the playful association of devotees, Krishna will give us himself. The story tomorrow that we will speak was the last chapter that His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada translated and wrote commentaries for before Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar brought him back to Goloka Vrindavan. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai. Shri Gaura Nithai ki jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Ananti Koti Vaishnav Brinda ki jai. Shri Bhakti Devi ki jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Nithai Go Premanandi. Thank you very much.